Worth Repeating is made possible thanks to the support from the 80/20 Foundation, the Lifschutz Foundation, and Pasha Mediterranean Grill.
Some of the stories may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to the Worth Repeating podcast. I'm Tori Poole. This is the second part of the live storytelling event recorded at the Irma and Emilio Nicolas Media Center at Texas Public Radio in downtown San Antonio. The theme was red-handed. From teenage antics to frat boy schemes, these stories are all about those awkward moments that make and shape you. What's the most shocking thing you've ever gotten away with? Our first storyteller is Juice Rodriguez. Juice shares a story about getting away with theft only to be discovered by the worst person possible.
The story revolves around myself, my best friend, and my mother. A little background on my mom is that she's a very religious woman. Which, I mean, I know everybody hears a lot, but this is different than just your regular Southern religious mom. She's brown. We're brown. We're a brown family, you know? And if you know what it means to be Catholic and Mexican, it means that, you know, it's your culture, essentially. La Virgencita is in your blood. There's no escaping it. So with that, I was told a couple sins that I was not to, like, indulge in. And one of those sins was sex. I was not to look at sex, I was not to talk about sex, and I was not to think about sex, because if I thought about sex, I was going to go to hell. And what is she going to do when I'm in hell and she's in heaven, because there's no way she's going to be able to plead a case good enough to get me out of there. So, you know, no sex. But there was, we were coming to a time, I was coming to a time in my life where I was getting curious. I wanted to know what the hype was around this big O. And so I asked, you know, my best friend, who I've known since we were 8 years old. Like, every stupid decision we made it together. You know, dumb and dumber, about to become even more dumb. And I tell her, I'm like, hey. And she's like, yes, I got you. And she comes up with this super inconspicuous plan of how we're going to get me my big O. So we head to the mall in the back of her mom's car, because of course we can't drive, and we show up at Spencer's. And if you know anything about Spencer's, they have... Yeah, I know. All right. Right? Spencer's has this thing called the wall. And the wall is floor to ceiling of sex toys. Vibrators, butt plugs, nipple clamps... Whatever you're looking for, it's probably there at Spencer's, right? So we're sitting, we're standing, trying to act super mature, going, yes, I love tickling sensations. I know what this means, which is crazy, like, that we're trying to act so mature, because right next to us is a shirt that says, my autism gets me laid. So it's like, you know, who cares? Who really cares? I pick something out for myself. We go to checkout, keeping that same facade of, like, we're super mature. And the cashier is just like, is there anything else I can get you? And I'm like, please get the hell out, because they're underpaid and underage. And we're like, no. And, you know, skedaddle. And, you know, mission successful. Like, everything is good. Life is super good. I'm a newfound mastermind. And, you know, like... Yeah, I'm living life large. Everything is going well, so well that a year passes. And I'm coming home from visiting my dad, because of course my parents are divorced. Look at me. I walk into my house and I open the door and I smell fabuloso. And fabuloso in my home means cleaning day. And cleaning day in my home means go through my daughter's room and try to find all the shit that she's hidden from me day. So I book it up the stairs, do a bit of a quick pause, and I'm like trying to listen to see where my mom is at. And I hear her taking a shower. So I'm like, perfect. Go into my room, dig through all my hiding spots, you know, secret phone, check. Singular cigarette, check. Note I wrote a long time ago when I was in a really bad spot, but keep around just in case. You know, it's there. So I'm like, yay! Everything is good. Wipe the sweat off my brow. Start finishing whatever chores were left in my room, humming along to a tune, and then I hear something humming along with me, and it is the faint sound of the restroom vent. And my mom never cleans my restroom. So I start tiptoeing my way to my bathroom, slowly reach my little finger out to flick on that light because I already know it's going to be there. And when I do, it's staring at me, and I'm staring at it. My bright purple with green alien heads vibrator. yeah. Interesting choice, right? And my mom put it there for a reason. And that reason is to say, not only do I know about this, if you try any stupid shit, I'm gonna beat your ass. And so, of course, I do what everybody would do, which is I try stupid shit. I snatch that thing up, I go hide it in a different spot in my room, and I start like panic doing my chores. I'm just like, yes, yes, I'm a good daughter, I'm a good daughter. Right. And she comes up to me after her shower and she asks like subtle questions of, how are you? How's your dad? How's your weekend? Is there anything you want to talk about? And I'm like, no. Not at all. I love you, Mom. Have I ever told you that before? I love you so much. And she gives me a look of like, you got one more shot. And I take it. I double down on, there's nothing I want to talk about. I'm good. You're good. We're good. And I love you. And so, of course, I get grounded. You know, of course, I get my ass beat. Grounding consists of regular stuff, no phone, no friends, write up a list of sins I have to confess to a priest later. Just, like, regular stuff, you know? Not traumatic at all. And time passes by. I eventually fess up to it with, like, some weird excuse of, like, it was my friend's sister's, right? And I only ended up, like, confessing because she found my other phone. And, like, what was I going to do without Instagram? So, whatever. Tell her the story. I'm ungrounded. I can go see my best friend again. And when I show up to my best friend's house, she tells me there's something she has to show me. And I'm shivering in fear because the last time she told me there's something I need to show you with a big old smile on her face, she ended up with a tattoo right here that she got when she was going through a rough time, you know. But whatever, I love that girl. So I'm like, yes, tell me whatever it is. And I'm so ready and I support you no matter what you do. And she whips out her phone, and it is a screenshot of a conversation between our moms. And it's a very brief conversation. It starts off with a picture of my bright purple with green alien heads vibrator, and is followed up with her mom saying, you know, with the way things are going in your marriage, I would think you would need one too. yeah. They're still together, by the way. Alrighty, that's my story.
This podcast is proudly supported by the 80/20 Foundation, dedicated to creating opportunities through education, community outreach, and meaningful impact. For this and more information, visit 8020foundation.com.
Our next storyteller is Chandler Crawford. Chandler shares a story about how he really did save money and live better, a Walmart slogan.
Most of the people in my life don't know this story. Some coworkers, some close friends, and my parents. Tori, I know your reach is very vast, so Mom and Dad, I love you. I'm sorry. I know you know that myself and my soul's in a much better place today. So I was a senior in high school at Georgetown, Texas. For those that don't know, it's like the shirts of Austin. It was spring break, and a couple of baseball buds and I were heading down to Port Aransas. Oh, yeah. The beach, the trucks, backed up, the beads. And, yeah, after about the second day, all of our cold beer that my friend's older sister had bought for us, we had consumed pretty quickly. And my buddy's like, "That's all right, I got us. We're going back to the beach next day. We got to reload." I'm like, "All right, I'm going. I'm tired of drinking Coors Light. Got to try something else." So I go with them and throw in some Miller Lights, some Lone Star. Mangaritas were really popular at the time. Learned the hard way. And I'm like, "All right, here's some Munchies, Doritos. We're going to get hungry." And I start walking with them, and we're walking towards the checkout line. And we're getting to the cash register, and we just walk through an empty cash register line. And we get past there, and we just go right out the front door. And I'm like, I wasn't pushing the cart. I'm cool. Well, we did it again the next day, and this time I was like, "All right, we gotta get chips and dips, queso. More snacks, more mangaritas." And I swore that that was it. You know, I was a senior in high school. I was mature now. I was going to college to be a frat star. Not going to happen again. So flash forward 6 months, I'm a freshman. And it's orientation week, and it's night one. And we're like, "All right, we gotta get some cold bears here. We got to get going." And we're strategizing who's going to do what, who's got fake IDs. I'm like, "Frick, I haven't thought of that yet." And I'm like, "All right, y'all buy the liquor. I got the cold beer and the mixers. I'll see you in an hour." So I go by myself, and I'm like, "I remember that trick." Just this one time, I'm going to push that cart. So I throw in a couple of cases of Coors Light, Michelob, Miller Lite, Lime and Cactus, Lone Star, chips, dip, light load. And I walk towards the cash register, spot an open one, walk through it, get through the main line of traffic, you know, going towards the exit, see the security at the front gate. Just have a nice day. And just walk right out. Again, that's the last time I'm gonna do it. Lord, forgive me. Until it's the next day. And it became a bit of a trend, and to say the least. I learned some things to get more creative. I always had a knack for being a little sneaky. And I was a junkie for getting away with things. So this just frickin' fed that to a T. I learned that if I took like the self-checkout bags and put them in my cart, and as I would get the cold beer, and now I was getting ribeyes and New York strips, cinnamon rolls, yeah, all the munchies. Before I would walk out, I'd get really close, and I would load up all of the tangibles into the checkout bags. And then I would walk through the empty checkout line, say what's up to the disabled security guard, and walk out. And I would park really far away, just in case something happened. I'd look back over my shoulder looking. And the furthest place that you could put the cart back, that's where I would park, because I would obviously put the stolen goods in my car and then put the cart back, because I'm not an asshole. Yeah, that is not just freaking putting that up on a curb. I parked so far away because we were in Mississippi, hottie toddy, go to hell, LSU, all that good stuff. And in Mississippi, there's really tall pine trees. And on the other side of the Walmart parking lot was a massive frisbee golf pine tree forest that I played. And I knew that if I ever looked back and saw somebody coming, I was going to leave that cart and head right for the pines. And I'm 19 years old, and there ain't no way they're going to catch my ass. So I felt pretty comfortable in it. One of my freshman roommates, he came from what I call a privileged family. Not that growing up in Georgetown isn't. And his mommy, you know, gave him grocery money every week. Must be nice. And I'd get his list from him when I would go get my my goods, because I wasn't advertising that I was doing this. This was still very hush-hush. And I would get his groceries, get mine, and then I'd come back and give him his groceries and be like, that was $225. Yep, thank you, Jerry. Because of my frat star network, I was able to teach a few of my friends some of these skills that I had learned. It was nice. It took off some of the load. You know, I didn't have to do it all the time now. It was like a breath of fresh air. Pledges? I got something to teach you. But I was smart, right? Like, every now and then I would go and I would intentionally pay for things. The low item stuff, you know, eggs, my onion, jalapenos. Farmers aren't making it these days. I don't know if you've seen the price of onions. And I would make sure to look at the camera as I scanned it, like, beep, put it in the bag, and I'd pay for it. Be like, just in case there's an eye in the sky. Yeah, I'm paying for this shit. And that was fine. And that lasted from August until about April. And April comes, we're getting ready for finals. And I never really thought that I couldn't justify paying for my big groceries. Not that I was hoping to get caught, but it's late April. I got English class at 1 p.m. And I'm not a good student, but I mean, I'm an average 2.5 GPA starting in ninth grade, and it never got better. But I went to class every time because I believed that if you made a good impression and you smile enough, you can get away with a lot in this life. So I had English at 1. I had a tea time at 2:30. I get a fresh cut. And I'm like, all right, boys, don't worry. I got the beer. Send me the Venmo. Stop by Walmart. I get two cases of Miller Lite. I get a couple of tall boys of the Mangaritas, still into it, some Lone Stars, and a six-pack of Michelob Lime and Cactus, a rotisserie chicken, and the like multi-Dorito chip munchies for the homies. And instead of parking really far away, instead of having my checkout bags, instead of walking through the empty checkout line, I just walked right out the front door, and I put all of my goods in the car, and as soon as I turn around, there's three grown-ass men coming right at me, and they're close. It ain't bucket and run. Good day, gents. May I see the receipt? Yeah, of course. You know, I'm looking around like, ah, frick. I must have thrown it away. That's all right. Just bring the cold beer back in the cart and we'll go to the checkout line that you paid for these goods with. You got it. I get the two cases of Miller Lite. I get the rotisserie chicken. I get the tall boys of the margaritas. And I put it in the cart, and I'm like, all right. And they're like, I'm pretty sure there was a six-pack of Michelob Lime and Cactus. Oops. Put that back, leave the tall boy in that seat, close the door, and we walk inside. And he's about, this is about the time you want to start cooperating with us, sir. Which cash register was it? And I said, that one. And we walk up to that line, and I'm like, eventually they're going to fold. And he's like, all right, start scanning. And I go, boop, chicken. Boop, Miller Lite. Boop, Miller Lite. And they're not finding it very funny or charming at all anymore. And I'm not one to fold, but I know when I've been got. And I go, yeah.
This episode is proudly supported by the Lifshutes Foundation, a San Antonio-based charitable foundation committed to strengthening communities through philanthropy and support for meaningful causes. For this and more information, visit directory.tpr.org.
Our final storyteller is Adrian Van Vega. Adrian shares a story about a sensitive time to break multiple laws.
My parents have been Jehovah's Witnesses for 60 years. And they are 0-for-3 with their children. My brother, however, did get baptized because he felt like it would help him get more girls. And in that religion, if you do not follow the rules, they will kick you out. And my brother was kicked out for selling weed in the parking lot of the Kingdom Hall. So, my brother was a good dad, and he was a really good brother to me, but he was a really horrible husband to all three of his wives. So my nephew Jake says that my family, my parents, and my sister and I are all highfalutin. We are fancy. My brother was not fancy. And when my brother passed away, my father had to pay for all the arrangements. And my father had never buried a child, so he asked his friend Eason for advice. And he always turned to Eason when he didn't know something because Eason is a Vietnam vet, and my father feels like if Eason survived Vietnam, then he must be really smart and he knows stuff. So Eason directed my daddy to a funeral home that was right next door to a nursing home. And so they were opportunists. They were not very nice people. And when we went to the funeral home, they kept us waiting for, like, this was after they had my brother, and they kept us waiting for 2 hours. And they said that if we all, and it was my parents, my sister, and my sister-in-law, and my two nephews, and they said that if we all wanted to see him, that was a service, and that we needed to pay another $3,000 on top of the $3,500 that my father had already paid for the cremation. So my dad said no, and they said, well, okay, well, six of you can see him, like, three at a time. And so my sister-in-law and my nephews went in. And then my sister and my mother and I went in. My brother was literally in the kitchen of the funeral home. He was in the break room. There was a recycling bin beside his head. And my sister is crying. And my sister and my brother did not get along. They were very far apart in age. And my sister's crying. And she's saying, I'm so sorry I didn't invite you to my wedding. And she's crying more than my mother. And at this moment, a man comes in, I guess some sort of funeral director, and he says, it's really not fair to the families that pay for a viewing for you to see him. And my sister's tears dried up instantly. And she said, did the fucking check my daddy gave you clear? And my mother asked, you know, when we could take my brother's remains. So that evening, we're at my parents' house, and it's a house full of people. People just kept showing up because Southern people like to feed grief. And because of my parents' religion and my brother being kicked out, my parents couldn't have a service at their Kingdom home for my brother, and they weren't going to go to his church. And so they told their friends they were going to have a private service for him. My brother had told his wife that when he died, he wanted to be his ashes to be scattered in Falls Lake. And so there's a house full of people, and I said, guys, can we go away and talk about this for a minute? So my parents and my sister and I, we go in my parents' room, and I said, this is illegal. We have to make a plan. We have to see how we can do this and not get arrested. And my mama said, stop saying it's illegal. I said, it is. It is the disposal of human remains in a public park. That is illegal. She's like, you can bury people at sea. This is not at sea. This is a lake. I said, so you have to, I'd already Googled it. You have to be 3 nautical miles from the shore to bury somebody at sea. We were in a lake. So my mom says, stop saying it's illegal. You can go back to Texas and take your sister with you. And then to deal with her grief, she starts to clean. So she goes in the ensuite and starts cleaning the bathtub. And then my father, we call my sister-in-law because the funeral home called the person who wrote the check. So my dad was in possession of my brother. And they did not call the widow. And so my sister-in-law says, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is the plan. She says, Rhonda, her sister, knows where my brother liked to fish. I didn't ask why Rhonda knew and my sister-in-law didn't. It's not my business. And she's going to show us where we're to go. All right. So the next morning, and it was very rainy. We go right at 8 a.m., right when the park opens. And as we're driving, my dad's driving, and I look, and I see on the front seat is his big, thick reference Bible. This is the kind of Bible you use to, like, write sermons, right? And it's got notes in the margins. So I said, Daddy, we don't have time for a service. We have to go. We just got to sprinkle them and go. We don't have time for this. And so when we get there, we're getting out the car, and I'm holding my brother, and his ashes are still warm, and he says, and my dad goes and reaches for that Bible, and I said, I'm going to get my mama on my side. She's going to back me up. So I say, Daddy, tomorrow in the newspaper is going to say, Jehovah's Witness gets arrested for disposal of human remains in a public park, because you cannot bring shame on their religion or their name. So my mom says, you got to leave that Bible here. So I know my parents, it was probably difficult for them to decide what to wear to scatter their only son's ashes in the park. And it's raining. It just stopped raining. And my dad has on dress slacks and a crisp button-down shirt and some wingtips. And my mama has on her usual, it was August, her usual summertime uniform of a white blouse and some white pants and some white sandals. But she has a big white pocketbook and she has a coffee cup. And she would not leave, I asked, she would not leave the coffee cup behind. I don't know what was in the coffee cup, but the coffee cup was coming with her. And so we get out and I hand my sister-in-law's there and Rhonda, her sister, and my nephews. And everybody else is dressed to go walking in the woods in the rain and mud. And we don't really look like we know each other because my brother's family is white presenting and we are not. My nephew has his name tattooed about this big on his neck. And so my mom is holding on to one of my nephews, and we're walking in the woods. We walk about. Rhonda's showing us where to go. And Rhonda also has made programs for this event with my brother's face on the front and a poem on the inside, and it has the day he was born, and for the date that he died, it says, gone fishing. So So when we walk 15 minutes into the woods, and my mom's got her coffee and my nephew, and we get to the shore, and my sister-in-law is holding my brother, and she goes, "Does anybody want to say anything? Because he loved you all very much." I'm like, "Lord, why does she say that?" So my father goes into a whole ass eulogy. And about the fifth Bible scripture, the verse that he quotes, I like go, "Daddy, we gotta go. We gotta go." And my sister thought this was her opportunity to get some shit off her chest. So she starts going, "He didn't even believe your religion, and you're making this about you." And my mama starts yelling at my sister, and she's saying, "That was our son, and we could say what we want." And I'm crying. My dad's still quoting scriptures. And I'm crying half because for my brother, but half because I don't want to get arrested. And then, my brother's family is just looking at this highfalutin circus. Their eyes are all wide because we're all yelling. And we did sprinkle my brother's ashes in the lake. We did not get caught, fortunately. And I miss my brother every day.
That's it for the Worth Repeating podcast. Do us a favor and give us a like, subscribe, or review us wherever you stream podcasts. Worth Repeating returns this fall. Do you have a theme suggestion, want to join the storyboard, or maybe you just want to give us our flowers? I'd love to hear from you. Shoot me an email at worthrepeating@tpr.org. Support for Worth Repeating comes from the 8020 Foundation, Lifshutz Foundation, and Pasha Mediterranean Grill. Worth Repeating is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Tori Poole. Thanks for listening.